There is a cheese grater in my kitchen drawer that I haven't used in around probably 4 years, which is a strange thing to be attached to, I'm aware. It's not even a nice one. But it's in the good drawer. This is the drawer that's reserved apparently for tools that mean something. And every so often, I open that drawer and I see it sitting there. And I think, yeah, soon I'll be a person who grates his own cheese again. And I just have to get past this crazy busy season or whatever it is. And once things calm down, I'll get back to really cooking. The real way, with fresh Parmesan and a quality grater, instead of whatever pre-shredded bag of orange regret that I've been buying. Except, of course, things never really calm down. They just change shape, I suppose. And now, opening that drawer feels like I'm visiting a relative that I've been avoiding at Thanksgiving for going on half a decade. And no, I suppose this isn't really about a cheese grater. I think almost everyone has one of these things. Maybe it's that degree that you were going to finish, or it's that smaller pair of jeans that you keep around like a hostage, waiting for a ransom that you stopped negotiating years ago. There's this whole other life that people are waiting to start, right? I mean, so many of us live like this. This is the so-called real life in the future. That's the version of life that begins the second that the current situation, whatever garbage fire it happens to be this year, finally resolves. But deep down, the current situation's never going to resolve. It's just going to get replaced by some different situation with a similar job title, right? So, nonetheless, you keep waiting and you keep waiting politely and indefinitely. And all the while, you're standing in this line that never actually moves, where occasionally you're handed a little update to the standing still. Well, you're handed a little update, so the standing still feels like it's leading somewhere. So, all right. Here's the thing about that statement. Once things calm down, it's never actually a lie when you say it. But that's what makes it so effective, right? It's once the move is done, once the kids are a little older, once I get that job, I don't know. Once I'm out of debt, once I get out of jail, every single one of those things is a real, legitimate, fully justified reason to put something off for a while. But the problem, it isn't any individual reason. The problem is that reasons, they don't neatly queue up and wait their turn politely. They just keep arriving. One replacing the last one before you've even noticed that the handoff happened. And sometimes, of course, they just keep piling on. And I think people imagine this waiting like it's just a phase or something, like it's something with an exit, because again, you're just in some crazy busy season, and but then you get through it, and then the real life starts. The one where you grate your own cheese and you call your mother back and you finally write the thing or do the thing or whatever it is. But unfortunately, it doesn't really work like a season. Because a season, well, a season ends due to the Earth's tilt. As it orbits the sun, right? But this doesn't have anything moving it. I guess there's no mechanism that's forcing the calm to actually arrive. You just have this feeling that you're owed one eventually, like the way that you're owed a seat on a crowded train because you've been standing for a while. So what actually happens is the waiting becomes the baseline. It's not just a phase that you're in. It's like the actual operating system that's underneath everything else. And sometimes I think about this in its most extreme version. For example, like somebody very old and very sick who's finally free of every single obligation that had been the official excuse for 40 or 50 years or whatever. So no job, no kids needing rides anywhere, no moves or climbing some corporate ladder or digging themselves out of debt. There's just total, complete, unbothered bandwidth. Which is, generally speaking, not exactly the best moment to finally start living your life. It seems that there's a bit of scheduling issue there, but that is the world that we live in, I suppose. So, if the waiting isn't actually just a phase. I guess the obvious next question would be, well, then what the hell is it? And why does the brain seem so stubbornly committed to it? Well, as it turns out, there's actually a rather clarifying neurological explanation for why this keeps happening, though it is slightly insulting. So there's a psychologist named Hal Hirschfield who ran a series of brain imaging studies where he asked people to think about themselves in the future, like 10 or 20 years in the future. And so what he found was that the brain activity produced by thinking about the future version of you, it looks almost identical to the brain activity produced by thinking about a completely different person. So not a future version of yourself, a total stranger. Which means that when you make a decision that future you is going to have to deal with, such as, I don't know, the debt or the health thing or whatever it is that you're not addressing, your brain is essentially making that decision on behalf of someone it has no actual relationship with. So you're not stalling for yourself, really. You're stalling on behalf of a stranger. And then you're handing them the bill. Future you is basically the most overworked and worst treated employee in your entire operation. And who gets that person gets assigned all the difficult stuff. So future you never gets a raise, never gets thanked, has no recourse because, well, by the time they show up, the statute of limitations for complaining about it has, that's apparently expired. And I think that this explains something about why your so-called real life keeps not starting. Because starting requires current you to make sacrifices for future you, right? So you have to do the uncomfortable thing now in exchange for something that hopefully pays off later. But if the brain doesn't really register future you as fully you, if that person registers somewhere between like an acquaintance or minor inconvenience, then the motivation to do anything on their behalf is going to be at best inconsistent. And it's not really laziness. It's just that the person who benefits from starting is someone that your nervous system doesn't fully recognize yet, anyway. And the person who bears the cost of starting is right here holding, well, you guessed it, the cheese grater, very much present. But not, they're not especially enthusiastic about doing hard things for some stranger. There is a philosopher by the name of Soren Kierkegaard who wrote about something that I think applies here pretty well. And, well, I think it should be mentioned that, Kierkegaard is one of those thinkers with particularly sharp ideas that are written in prose that's, well, let's just say that it's a commitment. So we're going to take the useful part and try to leave the 19th century Danish theological architecture where it belongs. Kierkegaard wrote a book called Either Or, where he described what he called the aesthetic stage of life. And so the basic idea here is this is a life that's organized around keeping your options open. It's organized around novelty, distraction, the next interesting thing, whatever that might be. It's pretty much the avoidance of any commitment that's specific enough to actually close a door. But, you know, this aesthetic person, it's not that they're unhappy. They're just in this state of being perpetually between things. They're always about to begin, and they're never actually quite beginning. And Kierkegaard's observation, which I find a little uncomfortable in the way that accurate things tend to be, is that this isn't actually, this being in this state isn't actually freedom or freeing, I guess. It's actually a kind of despair that doesn't announce itself as despair because it doesn't look melodramatic or something. It looks like flexibility. And it basically, it looks like someone who just hasn't found the right thing yet. Which, when you think about it, is a pretty convincing disguise. So you could look at it like it's despair that's wearing a keeping my options open tote bag, telling everyone it's just waiting for the right opportunity. Because, well, here's the thing about keeping your options open indefinitely. At some point, it stops being a strategy and it just starts being your life. And it's the kind of life where nothing is ever really chosen or started, and nothing is ever quite lost either. Because, well, you never committed to it in the first place. So nothing's really happening. And, you know, you can't grieve the path that's not taken if you're technically still standing at the fork in the road, right? Which feels safe. And I'd argue it's its own kind of loss. Because it's the loss of a life that actually happened, traded for the comfort of one that theoretically still could happen. And Kierkegaard would say that the waiting, it isn't neutral because it has a cost. It just sends the invoice to you in the future. All right, so I want to get, I guess, briefly concrete here because I think the waiting, this waiting situation, it feels abstract until you attach something to it with an actual finite, you know, shrinking number attached to it. Oliver Berkman, who I've mentioned many times before, so he wrote a book, he wrote about this sort of thing in his book, 4,000 Weeks. And the title of that book, by the way, well, I guess it refers to the, that's the rough number of weeks in a human life of about 80 years, which might sound like a lot, right? Until you do the math on how many of these weeks you've actually already spent, which I have done. And then it sounds considerably less like a lot. And then you put the book down and you stare at the wall for a while, which is, I guess, I think that's the intended response. because it's fairly alarming. And it turns out that that someday account, it's not infinite, or more accurately, I guess I should say, it's not nearly as substantial as you thought it was. Every week that's added to the waiting list is a week that's subtracted from the only life that was ever actually going to happen. Unfortunately, there's no supplementary life running in the background, accumulating interest while you wait for conditions to improve. There's just this one. And that's the one that's happening right now while you're standing in the kitchen thinking about grating cheese. And I think people know this. But they only know it in a way where it's, I guess it's like sitting in the background in some, is like a low grade unease that occasionally surfaces at 3 in the morning, and then gets suppressed again by the time you wake up. Because, there's bills to pay and work to do and emails and blah, 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 and so forth. And I've noticed that there's a certain type of absurdity to the retirement version of this situation. That's there's this idea that of carefully saving up free time for later, hopefully, if you make it there. So you're basically banking decades of deferred living against a future window of availability. Like it's some kind of loyalty rewards program. And if you're fortunate enough, or I guess lucky enough to accumulate enough points, then you eventually get to cash them in for the real life, ideally. Except the reality is the redemption window has terms and conditions that nobody reads, of course. And the points expire, and the catalog gets smaller. And so by the time that you've saved up enough points, the things that you were saving for have occasionally stopped being available at that price, which is one of the this is one of the less charming surprises that the universe has in store. So, all right, here's where I'm going to try to not turn this into an insufferable motivational speech or something, because that's toxic positivity territory. And if you've watched enough of my videos, you already know my feelings about that. And so the reason the motivational speech doesn't usually work, I don't think that the advice is wrong necessarily, so much as they all pretty much share the same basic assumption, that starting requires the right conditions and the right mindset, just the right moment of clarity. And that once you have those things all lined up, the starting will feel natural and vaguely cinematic or something. but it doesn't. It feels shitty. Starting from a stopped position on something that matters under conditions that aren't exactly ideal, which is, of course, every condition that's ever existed, it feels like trying to start a car that's been sitting in a field for 4 years. You're going to need more than one attempt, and things are probably going to make weird sounds that you weren't expecting. And there's a real possibility that the first few miles are going to be pretty ugly. Annie Dillard wrote something that stayed in the back of my mind. How we spend our days is how we spend our lives. Which sounds simple enough to put on a mug, I guess. But I think the implication of that is actually fairly brutal. Because there's no real life waiting in a separate room while you finish up with this one. This has been it the entire time. Operating as the rehearsal without anyone clarifying that the rehearsal and the concert were actually, in fact, the same event. And I think the only honest version of starting, it isn't about finding some right moment. It's being willing to start badly in the wrong conditions. Without the dignity of, some clean beginning. I think you got to be okay with doing the thing in the form that's actually available, rather than waiting for the form that you thought it was supposed to arrive in. I mean, the cheese grater isn't going to use itself, unfortunately, even if it's some high-end tech version. Okay. I know I keep coming back to the stupid gr cheese grater. Not that it's a profound object or anything. I mean, it's a cheese grater. It's about as profound as a cheese grater. Which is to say, it's not very profound, obviously. But I think the reason that this thing has stuck with me is that it's such a completely, I don't know, an undramatic, or I guess like an anticlimactic version of the same thing that everyone's carrying around in some form or another. Because I think the big version of this, the life you kept scheduling for later that feels too heavy to look at most of the time, it's got too much weight attached to it. It's got too much of what it would mean to actually reckon with it. But the cheese grater, it's that's small enough to be honest about. It's just an object in a drawer that I've been saving for a version of myself that just keeps not showing up. And at some point, a different question that's harder to dismiss at 3 a.m. is going to sit down across from you, and it's going to wait, which is was that version ever real? Or was it always just the story that I told myself to make the current version feel temporary. Because here's what I think is actually true, that I find both clarifying and somewhat annoying in roughly equal measure. There is no so-called real life waiting to begin. There's just this one. This is the one that's been happening the whole time that you were in the waiting room, convinced that the actual appointment was still coming. And the waiting isn't neutral. It's as Kierkegaard would remind us. And the weeks are actually finite in a way that's, I guess, easy to know, but hard to feel. As well, as Berkman spent 400 pages pointing out. And also, the future you that Hirschfeld was talking about, that's someone your brain has been treating like a stranger this whole time. Unfortunately, none of this adds up to a nice clean instruction of some kind. And also, unfortunately, I don't have one either. But I do think that there's something worth actually doing with the cheese grater. And it's not because grating cheese is, life-changing. It's because leaving it in the drawer for another 4 years or whatever, while telling yourself that counts as saving it for something, that's a choice too. It just doesn't really feel like one. And on some level, I think you already know that. And, all right. That is quite enough about cheese graters for today. Does remind me of actually another video I made, I think last year, sometime about maybe almost a year ago, that started off with me talking about cheese graters, and it was a video on minimalism. But anyway, I digress. As always, thanks so much for listening.